I'm here with an international juggling superstar, Niels Dunker.
Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero podcast.
Sometimes I try to pronounce people's names that aren't from America in their own accents, and that never works out. So I just announced Niels' name in my dumb American accent way. So I apologize to him for that. He's one of the best jugglers in the world, and I'm not even exaggerating with that at all. He can do things that I will never be able to do, and it's just amazing. He travels all over the world. He's currently in Las Vegas. He has amazing travel stories and all kinds of stuff that he's gotten into, so we'll get right into it. Here he is.
Yeah, cool. So I started juggling when I was 12 years old, and then when I was 13, I did my first show. I started my first show in small parties, and then went all over the country, street performing. I did that in the beginning, all the festivals. And then at one point I came across the cruise ships. So then I really wanted to work on all the cruise ships. That was in 2004, actually, because of Ivan Pacell, Tim Rootberry, Scotty Kavanaugh. I met him at the very first World Juggling Federation convention here in Las Vegas. And then that was the first time I heard about the ships, and it sounded like nice stages, but still the interaction that I was already doing during the street shows. And also in Europe, you got the variety shows. So some of my friends were working in these variety shows. It's like, okay, I really like the nice stages from those shows, but also like the interaction that I'm doing with my current gigs. And it seems like with the cruise ships, you could have the best of those two worlds. So then I pursued to get that ready. So it took me 5 years to get my show ready to get my very first cruise. Yeah, I've been doing that now for almost 6 years. And then because of all those international shows, I could get a visa for the US for aliens with an extraordinary ability. And it's still valid now. So it's like, okay, let's use this work visa. So now, since all the ships are over in the Caribbean, at least they're out of Europe because it's winter in Europe right now. So it's like, okay, let's go there. So I booked a couple of ships and some stuff around in the US as well. So I'm here until mid-April, and then one of my friends is going to get married in Europe. So I go there, but that's also right thereafter that the European summer season on the cruises starts again. So then I go back to Europe, work the summer season, and then I will see thereafter if what I'm going to do with the United States.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. You kind of mentioned there something I wanted to touch on with the working the cruise ships as a good combination of like a nice stage, different than working on the streets, but also it gives you a good opportunity to work with the interaction and the comedy-based stuff on the show. And I wanted to talk to you about that as you are a very technical juggler, very high-skilled technical juggler, and how you kind of blend the high skill stuff with comedy and interaction with your audiences.
Okay, yeah, I think it's just the same as the comedy jugglers, maybe with a different skill set. It's just because I practice so hard on my skill. Now it enables me to do more tricks, but it doesn't take away from the comedy potential. I think it just adds to the comedy potential because now, since I practice so hard, I have more tricks that I could do. And also I love all the different props, so that gives me a bit of bigger variety. And because of the bigger variety, I have more to play with, so more comedy potential that even opens up. So more tricks and more comedy potential. So I think it's a win-win.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier how you kind of got linked up into the cruise ships by a couple of the different jugglers and people that you've met. And I know you're really big into collaborating and working with other people and kind of getting together with other entertainers and stuff. Talk about some people that you've collaborated with and worked with throughout your career.
Yeah, it's funny because I think Joni Spina, in one of her DVDs, she mentions like we variety acts. We're one of the few try to make a big show, but all want to do it on our own. Well, normally a big theater play, they have a writer, they have somebody that selects his costume, somebody that does the lighting, but yeah, we all want to do it all by ourselves. So I thought, how can I take that route and get the input from people that are there? Yeah, their job is just maybe just web design, just that, just so I can get the best from every field input from that. So with the comedy writing, since now most of my shows are in English, and I at home I always speak Dutch, so I learned English in school. Daniel Holtzman from the Raspini Brothers, he helped me with that a lot. So every week we do a Skype call, and on my new material, then I tell him first about it, then he gives me feedback, and then I put it on the stage. So that's one. Then Barry Friedman, he had his course like Showbiz Blueprint, get more corporate gigs to online courses. So I took those, and also Barry helped me one-on-one a bit, a lot actually, as well. So that's with the marketing. Then Ger Kopper. He won the FISM World Championships of Magic many years ago, but he has a magic school in the Netherlands, and he's very good with structuring shows, but different way than Dan does it. So he helped me with that as well. And then, with the videos, there's a lot of people notice now that the videos that I put out, I think they're really well put together, but that I outsource that as well. So because the son from the juggling shop, the owner of the juggling shop in Rotterdam, he was very into video. So he helped me with my new DVD last year and with my promo video. And now he's working for all the big DJs that work here in the nightclubs in Las Vegas, just by coincidence, because he's so good. So I was lucky that to get through that juggling connection that he's now, and he likes juggling, he likes theater, he likes his father, of course. So then I'm good friends with his father. So that's good. So it's one other person. And then, some projects, just virtual assistants, they helped me as well. And then I got a prop builder that helped me build my props, because there's so much stuff just to put a good show together. And we only have 24 hours in a day. And my days fill up pretty quick already. Just if I want to get all the stuff done that I want to get done, I need to get the time from other people on my stuff as well. So it just can go faster and play bigger.
Now, of course, working on cruise ships and stuff, you've got to travel all over the world. What's one of the standout travel stories or travel adventures that you've gotten into?
So actually quite a bit. Like last year, that went pretty bad. I flew all the way to Myanmar. That's even further than India, just to see the ship sail away.
You just missed it.
And then I had to fly all the way back. So I did one here in the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. I did a couple shows there. Then I had to fly to the Netherlands, get a flight. That was a little bit, delayed. Missed that flight, but they still booked me another one. But then it was pretty tight in the port in Myanmar, and the port agent wasn't there, and I had to go through with the visa stuff. And then I had to get a taxi myself because the port agent didn't show up, and because there was no communication with the ship, I just rushed it. We still called, but they already left. So I, with 15 minutes, I missed it. That was bad.
Where's your favorite place that you've been?
It's tough. Like, the world is really big and there's so many nice places. So I really enjoy being here right now. Of course, I also really enjoy being in Rotterdam, in the Netherlands, because that's where I grew up. That's where I live most of the time. I really like that. Travel-wise, cruises, like if I have to pick some countries where I could go to, I really like, Netherlands, of course, Northern Europe I really like. United States is a really good place. I really enjoyed my cruises around Australia. And I had an amazing time. My very first international contract that was in Japan. That was an amazing experience as well. It's just like stepping on another planet.
Yeah, that's awesome to be able to get out and explore and see all the different countries like that.
Yeah, it's really amazing because I do something I really like. Like, juggling was my hobby. It still is my hobby, but it's also not my job.
Yeah.
So, I really enjoy that. And then get to see all these places that otherwise I would never be able to go to or afford to go to.
Yeah.
And then just make my own schedule. It comes with a lot of responsibility and, a lot of planning. Like, sometimes it's all the situations that are good, they're much better than if I would just stay at home and would have worked with my mechanical engineering degree in an office. But all the situations that are crappy, they're much more crappy than they most likely would have been in the office.
Right. Yeah, exactly. How about that? So you went to college with what did you say your degree was?
Mechanical engineering.
So has that influenced your juggling and performance style, having that background?
I think so. I think the good thing is with I remember the very first week I was at the university, one of the professors said, like, most of the knowledge we're going to teach you, most of the stuff is going to be out of date in a few years. Because the world just moves so fast. But the thing that we're really proud of ourselves and our students is that we can give them a very big project. And then the skill you're going to learn is how to analyze it, break it down to like a to-do list, or just, analyze it so you can move very fast. So, for example, we said, like, okay, you have to calculate this kind of engine. And, only have 8 weeks. But first, you have never heard of that kind of engine. You don't know what it's used for. And then after 8 weeks, you have calculated and you're like almost an expert on it. So you go like, wow, it's in the beginning, it's so overwhelming, but at the end you still have nailed it. And it's the same with some shows. You go like, oh, this show is so overwhelming. But when I use the same strategy, same way of thinking that I learned at university, just break it down, do step by step, don't get overwhelmed, then at the end you still pull it off. You think, wow, in the beginning I didn't think I would be able to pull it off, but now I still have, because I kept my cool and at least took it step by step.
As a same step as this, different challenges and things that you might have experienced, have you had any, I know language, like you said, you kind of are doing most of your shows now in English.
Yeah.
And that's not your original language. Have you had any other kind of interesting or funny moments in things that happened that were kind of crazy or a little bit off because of performing in different countries with different language or cultural barriers or anything? Any kind of standout things that
I love it when they try to heckle me here, because then I go like, well, as you hear, it's not my first language, so sir, I do not know what you're talking about. It's just like, and then just ignore them. So with hecklers, they just ignore them and it's like, I don't know what you're saying, so that shuts them off right away, so I don't have to be rude. It's very effective.
Yeah, then, that's like a funny thing, because they're not going to keep pushing after that. They're just going to be like,
and if they do, I go, you seem like a nice guy, but so I just don't understand you. It's not my first language. If you repeat it in Dutch, then I would like to respond to you, but I don't get it.
That's funny because like people won't know if you're joking. Like, it's funny, but there's a part of it that'll actually shut the guy up.
Yeah, and I don't have to be mean. I don't have to be rude, but it's very effective. So that's great. And also with the language in the beginning, it was more difficult, just overwhelming, because, okay, I learned in school. Now I got this big room of native speakers. I need to entertain them, and hopefully I need to make them laugh, and I don't even master this language. So in the beginning, it was quite overwhelming. But now I've mastered it. I have a good amount of lines, also with the help of Dan Holtzman. But now I think it's almost become an advantage, because there's so many jugglers. But with the language, it's almost a USP, because I can play off that. People know I'm not a native speaker. So it gives me a little bit of an advantage because it's unique. So I think with language, that's cool. But then also when you go to a place like Japan, China, my Dutch is not going to cut it, but English is not going to cut it either. And so working there for 3 months in 2007, my first international contract, it was 4 shows a day, 6 days a week, 3 months in a row. And it was great, because in the beginning you try to talk a lot, but they don't get it. So at one point you learn how to communicate more with body language. And then later when you come back, you still have that skill, so then you can add the language. But then I can make myself clear by just my expressions, mm-hmm. which add a lot. And that was funny, because a lot of these American accents went over there. They're so used to talking so much, especially in this country. A lot of people talk so much, and the tricks, so little tricks, and so much talking. And it's very often they call it comedy, but I think it's talking, because I don't hear any laughs.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and that's
but they call it comedy because it sounds fancier. And of course, there are a lot of very good comedians here as well, but some just talk, and where's the payoff? Just do more tricks, make it visual. That's what I think, but at least that works for me. So that's what I learned in Japan and stuff. Just a lot of visual stuff, very clear instructions by pointing or whatever you want to do. And then if you add the language on top, it's a big bonus. But then also made me more conscious which lines, what information do I need to say. And it's with comedy as well. If you have extra words that don't add to the message, just fluff, and confuses the audience, and it's better to go short and sweet, and just be to the point.
Yeah. Now, going into that, like how you said, here especially, there's more talking and more words, kind of called comedy and not always especially very funny, but how much is that different, you know, as someone who's performed here in America on cruise ships and then especially a lot in Europe and stuff, how do those different venues approach things? Like, I know from talking to people, and you'll know this more than I will, but like in Europe, I think you can do more just skill-based. You can be stronger just doing skill-based stuff on stage, where here, like you said, you need to do more comedy, and it's like they need to talk about that.
I do not know. Like, I think for every market, you need to have an act that's very strong. And I think because people put the emphasis on talking here quite a bit, that's what the example that new performers see.
Yeah.
So that's the direction everybody goes. Because yesterday night I performed at the Harris Casino here, mm-hmm. and I did a 15, 20-minute set, and it was mostly, I think it was 80% juggling to music, 20% talking, and it got a really good reaction. And the same when you see jugglers like Paul Ponce, Victor Key, they don't talk at all, but just their body language and their expressions, they're so strong. So you communicate very, very well with the audience, but it's just not through talking. And I think when you can, every audience wants, the communication. But here it seems like since when everybody grows up, look at performers, it goes through the talking. And then a lot of people don't spend enough time on their scripts. So then the talking becomes just going on. Just words without too much message. But then the very good entertainers, and there are a lot of here as well that are very good, just they've taken their scripts and have went like, okay, what I'm saying and how many words I use for it and which words communicate a message and what not. If not, just kick it out. So, I think just in Europe there's more examples of, nice pieces to music in which the entertainer communicates well as well. So it's just, I think it both works. So with that act from Europe, I can do very well here, but also an American act that does very well and very funny and to the point with the approach, the American approach goes to Europe, kills as well. So just strong acts work, I think, all around the world and are strong acts still.
Cool. Yeah, that's an interesting thing to, that's like a nice way of looking at it rather than trying to fit into a thing. Oh, in America, I need to talk more. Oh, if I'm here, I need to kind of fit to this. That's a much more valuable approach to it. Just whatever, however you're communicating, obviously do it in a better way. And people are going to react. Like you said, you just did an 80% juggling show and people reacted well to it because you could back it up with a high skill level and be good on stage.
And also know, try it when I juggle, you still want to communicate as well.
Yeah.
That's what, and I did, I took a masterclass with Victor Key last summer and he had an explanation, like also when you do a trick, like when you juggle maybe a cascade, of course you can make the three-ball cascade. That's a basic juggling pattern for juggling for the non-jugglers. So it's just a basic three-ball juggle. You can juggle it high, you can juggle it wide, you can juggle it fast. And then when you juggle, also you can have different facial expressions, different way you stand. And it's also like normally, like when you see one person walking, you think, okay, you already have assumptions about the character of that person, what kind of person it is. Maybe if he walks very straight and maybe think, okay, this guy is successful, like if he wears a suit or whatever. So there's already some assumptions you have about that person. And then when, same like a performer, the way, if you just juggle three balls, there's so many different, you can juggle with so many different attitudes. So you already can communicate through just juggling three balls and you can already communicate. And if you pick that, it's still an artistic choice how you wanna, which message you wanna perceive, the audience to perceive by just doing the basic thing. And it's just one trick, so you can also, you really can communicate without talking, just body language and the way you make your tricks look. And
what do you typically want to translate to you? Like, what do you want your audiences to experience typically when they see you perform? Like, what are you trying to convey through your juggling?
It's a bit, it just changed a little bit per market that I work. Like the main market that I do, it's I do a lot of this, cruise ships, casinos type of shows with comedy juggling. So there I think now my character is going like friendly, cocky.
Mm.
So that's, I still want to be very likable, charming, friendly. Yeah. But I still have a lot, like a lot of jokes, like, that I'm so good. But it's like more like, cheeky, like it's a nice mix for me because I also personal, I just like to tease people in a friendly way. So I'm just now in the show, just like to tease 800 people, like friendly, cocky.
Yeah. Have you ever done, has there been something, you know, like you said, like kind of teasing, kind of like this friendly, cocky, attitude, but it's kind of takes it to a whole new level when you're in front of, 800, 1,000 people. Have you had experiences? And I'm sure that all had these experiences by going on stage when you think something is really going to work and you're like really excited to do it. And then you get up there and it just bombs. Have you ever had a standout moment like that where you really were excited about some routine or some joke or something and it just, didn't work?
Yeah, of course. But it happens less and less because you get more experience, so you learn from the previous mistakes. So you get a kind of a feel from what audience like, and then I always pass it by a couple other people. So it's like maybe the first performance, it bombs, but it bombs in front of Skype, in front of Dan Holtzman. So it bombs, but it's a safe environment to bomb.
Yeah.
So by the time it goes to like a venue that's very relevant and I shouldn't bomb, I already have, it went through a couple filters. So the chances that it bombs then is very small. And then with the comedy, of course, I try new lines. Sometimes it doesn't work, but then you'll just move on. So every show I try to put maybe 3-4 new lines into the show. And yeah, of course, sometimes it bombs, but most of the time it now goes well because the experience ended up passed by a couple other people.
Yeah. Do you ever do... So you're kind of working with some of these people like Dan, you said, and some other comedy people to help with your writing. How much do you ever add stuff into like improv into your show where it's just really off the cuff, or everything that goes into your show has kind of been tested or kind of tested out a little bit beforehand?
Well, the structure is being tested and then a lot of stuff happens as well. Yeah, yesterday the microphone started to making noise. So then I just made up some jokes in the moment, and those got laughs as well. So like, okay, I made them up in the moment, and I got laughs, and it's good. That was not a line I had heard before. So I was like,
yeah.
So I still do that. So I try to be in the moment. So whatever happens, that I can play with it. So, but also I want to have this. This is what Dan's, this framework. So I have my line, so I know where I want to start, or where I want to end, and then I know how I want to get there. But then I want to be in the moment enough that I can go off route and display with the situation, make it more personal to the audience that they know, okay, this is a situation. It only happened this show. If we went to see this show another time, it's going to be different. So it's a unique experience for the performer, for this, for the audience. So I try to be in the moment, but also I want to have my basics, so I know where I want to end up.
Right.
So it's a bit of both.
Who are some artists or performers that are not within the juggling variety realm that kind of inspire you and motivate you?
Yeah, you got for the business, I really like Seth Godin.
Yeah.
So he's like a blogger, kind of, he is an artist as well. So yeah. I really like always there. So I think for all entrepreneurs, it would be wise for everybody to listen to just look up Seth Godin, like Purple Cow and all those books. I love that a lot. And also about like, yeah, USP, like you said, like these days, quality is standard. So all the stuff that you buy, it's working. It's like, and even like incredible stuff, like computers, coffee machines, whatever. Like it's pretty incredible technology if you think about how it's made and how good it is compared to maybe 200 years ago. But you go like, okay, it's working. It's okay, it's working. So nothing special about that. And that's just what our shows as well. Yeah, they expect that it's going to be a solid show because they can watch so many good entertainment like on television, YouTube, and even with something like so niche like juggling. Most people have now seen pretty incredible juggling just because maybe one night they stumbled upon a couple of juggling videos on YouTube. So they are getting to know what is good juggling and what's not good juggling just because of the internet. So then it's very important to have, a couple of unique stuff that people really are interested to watching, but all that's different from the mold, so they pay attention to it. So I think also, so I read all those books with my show in my mind. So like, what's going to be my purple cow?
Hmm.
What in the business is going to be my linchpin? So I really like that. So that inspired me a lot in shows to make it wow for the audience that I want to see it. And it's not a juggler like the other ones. No, this is unique. This is Niels Dank.
Yeah, and I know you kind of really focus and really try to work on improving your, whether it be your show or your marketing or your, branding of your show. And besides your actual show, you recently came out with a book kind of talking about that. So, give a little bit of an insight about where the, what motivated you to write the book. And then also, where is that kind of leading you to new opportunities and things opening up because you did it?
Yes. So, actually funny because Barry Friedman, he has his son, and through Facebook, Barry has been following and I've been over to his house, stayed there, and his son really likes what I do. And Barry said like, it's so amazing. You had your passion and now you created this incredible life around something you really like. It's like, and that's such a pipe dream for most people. But also if you take the steps and you dare to do it, it is doable for a lot more people. Just have to put in the work. But like this work ethic, it seems like instant communication, instant consumption for a lot of people. Just sit on the computer, just consume it. If they really need to put the work in, a lot of people stop doing it. So it's like, if you can show through your book your thoughts behind it, and then what all the stuff you're experiencing and the cool stuff that you come through with, is that, because also, yeah, like age-wise, they can still relate with it. It's not like, yeah, I'm 40, 50, whatever. It's still in the bracket that they can relate to. It's like, if you do that, it's still close enough to them. You have all these photos. It's like, hey, that's how the age Niels was at when I'm now, and he's doing this kind of stuff. So that's the age that I'm now. So I should be able to do that now as well. So it's like, if you write a book about that, it's like, it's probably very inspiring. So it's like, okay, wow, I will take on this challenge. So I started writing, and he and his wife, they guided me, they helped me putting it together. It's the first book I ever wrote. And so I finished it, great feeling. And now put it out in the world and get some great responses. And later, yeah, for the corporate speaking, it's a nice asset to have as well. And just also the credibility to just have a book. And then if you give it to people and they really go like, okay, I was too scared to do this, but now I saw that, it gave me some nudge to go ahead. It's like, wow, it was worth it, all this effort to write it.
Yeah, that's nice. That's what I'm kind of, throughout all the things that I'm doing, you know, whether it be the live show or, you know, these podcasts and blogs and stuff, it's so nice to see that, like you said, when someone sees that you did something that they might be thinking about wanting to do.
Yeah.
And then show, to be able to be the person that shows them that it's possible.
Yeah,
it's nice.
Like, so many people talk. And then in the soccer club in Rotterdam, like my favorite soccer club, is like this slogan, like, no words, but deeds. So like, yeah. I try to show by actually doing stuff. Also for my promo, I just feel like, hey, not like, oh, I can do this for you, I can make it, like all these big words. I was like, no, I did this. You see, this is some stuff I've done for previous clients. If you like that, I can do that for you as well. But it's your decision if you want to work with me, yes or no. But that's what I can do. I can duplicate the success for you. But not, yeah, so I want to back it, have it back up with actions. And then they can decide themselves. But that's also with this book. That's all the stuff I did. So instead of just all this, yeah, words that a lot of people speak without having experience, it's, yeah, now I think I've done so much stuff. And so if people get inspired by the stuff I've done, it's cool.
Yeah. And it's, I like to give people a little bit of a bragging moment of all the things that you have done. We kind of chatted about a few of those. What do you think your biggest accomplishment or the thing that you're most proud of has been throughout all the things, the performances and the book and getting to travel the world?
It's funny because what I'm most proud of is probably not what other people are most proud of. Other people are like, oh, you got this, this Guinness World Records, or you got this, the show here, you got the show there. I think for me, like, the trick, the juggling trick I remember the most is like the three ball juggle that I learned. It's like this aha moment. Then one show, like, everybody got, oh, you should go street performing, you should go make money with it. And they were probably taking their sentence much more seriously than they were. They were probably just joking. Like, oh, if I should, maybe I have to do it, because if I don't do it, I'm probably going to miss out on something really cool. And I still live by that slogan. Okay, if I should, that for me, should is the same as have to, must. Because if I should, like, then it's something, it indicates that it's a cool thing waiting for you if you do it. And you want to have cool things, because that's, if your life depends on it, then yeah, just go for it. So for me, maybe for performance wise, the very first time street performer, like 13 years old, just put my head down, like, so scary. Just the moment, it was more scary than all the shows I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what to expect. But it went really well. So I think just the moment, the first couple minutes, because you want to run away. Like, you have all this resistance that you're feeling. You want to go home and be safe. And just, but it's like, no, if I do that and I didn't make anything, you're just a big loser, because then you failed. So it's like, I have to. So I just juggled enough. Somebody gave me like maybe $1. And then I go like, okay, good. So now I did it. So when I go home, people say, you do it? I was like, yeah. I was like, did you make money? Yeah. And they asked, no, no, it was $1. I made money. That's, the answer is yes. And I did it. So I just, and not long enough that I could say, answer those questions with yes. And then I went home.
That's such a, you know, like how you said, there's those moments when you just want to go home and feel safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially I think when you're first getting started performing, it's something as simple, you know, you'd think people would be like, oh, it's easy, just go stand on the street and start juggling and people might pay you. Like, that's from the outside looking in, you think, oh, that's easy. Yeah, there's like no pressure, there's none of this. But it's something like that is so far out of our comfort zone, especially when we're starting, that it's so difficult. And then and then now it's like you can walk out in front of a stage of 1,000 people and just kill it and you feel comfortable. Yeah. The other side of that is you don't want to stay in that comfort zone too long. You want to kind of always be pushing and stuff.
Yeah, I think at one point you get, like with street before now, at one point then you're comfortable with it. So then your comfort zone is bigger. But then also you need to look for the next level. What's scaring you then? Because you want to have all those experiences. Then you grow and then you feel very alive as well. Yeah, so just always, what's the next scary thing? So I remember the very first time I was heading to a ship, I was like, a little bit shaking. Like, I was like, wow, for 5 years, it's a big goal. You got one shot to do it right. That was as scary as the first, street show. And then I did one show, like, oh, here, very first show in Las Vegas. You go, wow. Because I remember, like, Anthony Gatto, juggling legend. So I printed one photo, him juggling 7 clubs. And I put it next to my closet with my socks. So every morning I went to my socks. I saw there's a photo of Anthony Gatto juggling 7 clubs. So like, that was with Johnny Roman, like a fast skater, like very fast. He had it as well, like with his idol. There I was like, okay, I'm going to do that as well. So I see my idol every morning. I wake up. It's a reinforcement. But it was like this purple curtain with a special theater purple curtain in Las Vegas, and it was doing 7 clubs. And then I went to do a gig here, and I was like, fuck, that's the same, that's the same kind of curtain. I'm here, and now I can do 7 clubs, and I have to, that's kind of messes me, so much with my mind, like, for,
like, you made it,
over 10 years, I was looking that, and now I'm here on Las Vegas trip, doing it, like, all the stuff, like, every morning. I just, when I took my socks, like, okay, this is the moment, this is, like, the pinnacle. And then you do it, and then you go, okay, now I've done it, and then what's next?
Right. So what do you do? What do you have now? Like, what are you working on now that's at that next level that makes you feel uncomfortable?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's actually also a reason now I'm here, because now I'm in a different culture. All these talent agencies, they don't know me yet. But I know I can do it. It's not that much out of my comfort zone, but it's a little bit out of my comfort zone. So that's one thing I'm doing now. And every ship, it's still a little bit, because every ship could be your last one.
Yeah.
If you really blow it. And so and then thereafter, I think make it consistent. That's my path now. Because the big corporates, I've done some now, the biggest ones. I want to do more of those, but I've proven with a few that I can do it. Now with the cruise line, I've worked for all the ones that I was set out. So I've proven that. So now it's... consistently to get on that level. And I really like marketing as well. So at one point, I'm thinking, make my show super solid and then just get a very solid set, maybe 30, 40 minutes, 45, that you still can work all the places where I want to work. And then keep the tricks in it that I really enjoy practicing. I really enjoy shaker cup juggling now. It's stuff that the audience enjoy, I enjoy, make that a killer set. And then at one point, maybe also... look in other areas outside of juggling to get that thrill as well. Just keep the thrill of enjoyment from the juggling I'm still feeling now, but like get other influences. Because I think now with juggling, like most countries except Canada, I've all the places I wanted to visit, I've visited and performed there. So it's tough because then it becomes a duplication of the success you already have done.
Yeah.
And then now with some of maybe ventriloquist magicians that I wanted to work with. Now I'm working with these guys. I'm sharing the bill with these guys, which is great. But then go, wow, these are the guys I wanted to work with, and I'm doing it. So I think maybe challenge is to enjoy the moment now as long as it lasts. Maybe that's a good challenge.
Yeah. Do you see yourself juggling forever? A better question is, if you ever had to stop juggling for some reason or choose to stop juggling, what would you like to do as a career instead?
That's funny. Maybe your first question didn't sound as weird as the second one.
Go wherever you want with that then.
actually, funny. Like one of my friends and coaches and good friends, Freddy Canton from the Netherlands. He's 75 and he's still going very, very strong. He's still enjoying it. And he did very well. He did. He worked in the Moulin Rouge. He worked in all these big, big places. Then he retired from juggling part-time, became a very successful business owner, and now he's full-on back into juggling as a hobby and still practicing the tricks and really loving it. So I think I will be that path that he's taken. Mm-hmm. I would love that as well. So always reputable shows that you can be proud of and that the people like. But then also at one point, get the other stuff in your life as well, get some of those experience. But then still, because juggling is a good hobby, it's a good exercise, keeps you fit as well. So some people go to the gym, some people play tennis. Juggling can be that as well. But so I think I will be doing it for a long time. And then the career, now I really like, just as a hobby, I'm always on ships when I'm downtown. I like reading marketing books, business books. So I think at one point, I'll do more with that as well. But I think it's not that far away of juggling, because to create a juggling show, you need to take a unique juggling show. You need to think creatively. And to start a business, you need to also come up with nice solutions for problems that people have. So it's actually, that's the same, almost the same skill set. If you write a funny joke or to come up with a business idea, it's almost identical, because you need to think creatively, make something that has not been made before, come up before, or that something has been made up, think of a way to make it better. So I think for me then, you're still, maybe my mentality now is a juggler. And then everything I do, I approach it as a juggler.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. So we kind of touched with that. I kind of wanted to tie that up with when we talked about earlier, how you talked about kind of going out of your comfort zone and kind of experiencing new things. And I always like to have people give advice for people that are trying to create something and do something really cool with their life. What advice besides that, besides pushing your comfort zone, would you have to somebody who's trying to, not necessarily in juggling, but whatever they're trying to do, whatever creative type thing they're trying to do?
You have to be able to trust yourself, and you don't need permission to get started. The same with that street performing. I didn't need permission from anybody.
Yeah.
So I just went out, you have to do it. Like, to do it, you have to do it. So a lot of people are scared. I'm scared as well to go out and do that stuff. But I think, okay, that's just a feeling and it shouldn't stop me from doing it. But a lot of people, and it's very logical because that's human nature, they feel scared and that stops them from doing it. I think if you're scared but you think I should do it, then just do it and then just think, what are the worst consequences? For me, the worst is could have looked stupid. And maybe a police guy could have come up to me and is like, okay, it's very nice you're doing this, but you're not allowed to do this. Okay, pack your bag and then you go. So it's two things that wouldn't have killed me.
Right.
But if I wouldn't have done it, it would have killed the cool life, all the stuff I'm doing now.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, I was just going to say something now. I just lost my train of thought. I was going to say about how, especially young people coming up now, they have access to so much stuff that you really can, whether it's something as simple as going out on the street, we've always been able to do, but now there's so many more opportunities. Doing a podcast or something, making videos, you can collaborate with people throughout the world. So that's what I try to influence young people and stuff, to like make the most out of what is the opportunities that we have, that, you know, when I was growing up, I couldn't have done this, what we're doing right now, talking through a computer screen and then posting it out for the world to experience things that you have to say. It's like amazing. And I want people to go and push things and do these new things. And that's a cool way of thinking about it. I like that. Like, what do you have to lose? What do you have to gain? So think of it in two sides. What do you have to gain and what do you have to lose? And as most people think about that, we have so much more to gain than we ever have to lose by doing these types of things.
Well, maybe and also a thing I add, with YouTube or Facebook, it's very easy to focus maybe on the likes or the views or stuff like that. But I think the most gratification you get out of it, just by seeing yourself, the personal growth.
Yeah.
And at one point, if you've grown enough, then all those views and the likes and the support from all the other people, just a byproduct. But I was still like, enjoy the growth and the work you have to put into it, and then the other stuff will come. But if you only go for the quick success or the image from other people, you don't be happy with your stuff, what you're doing in the long run, I think. But if you enjoy intrinsically what you're doing I think it's much more durable and long-lasting.
Yeah. Cool. That's good stuff. Now, do you have anything to, before we wrap up here, do you have anything that you'd like to tell the listeners about what you're up to or how they can kind of experience some of your stuff, whether they see you live or through the videos or stuff online?
Yeah, the world is so big. So probably the internet, everybody has a computer these days. So if you go to...
If they're listening to this, they're on the computer.
So. That's right. You can get see photos, videos of my stuff at comedyjuggler.com.
Cool.
So, and there you can also click through to the YouTube, see more videos. And if you're interested in the book, then you can get that on Amazon, Catching Greatness, written by Niels Daunker. It's me. So, like motivation stuff, you can read more of that. It's a full book that I've written about it. And get more about my thoughts as well. So the video you can see on my website, click to my YouTube channel, and then you can see the person behind the voice that you're listening to now.
Yep. And I know you have some cool videos, including some cool like instructional videos. Is that on YouTube? If it's not, we can just cut that out.
No, definitely. I've uploaded a lot on YouTube, and there's a bit more on my DVD.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
and it's on Amazon as well, on my website as well. And then they can watch my entire theater show as well. That's on that DVD too. But also I put like a bunch of tutorials for free on my YouTube channel.
Cool.
But to wish everybody a great day. I hope you enjoyed listening to this this podcast. And definitely for me, it was a pleasure, fun to talk on this podcast and to be a guest.
Thanks so much, Niels, for joining on this episode. You just heard him talk about some of the videos and things on YouTube that you can find. You can see him do some amazing juggling, things that I will never be able to do. And he also has some tutorial videos. So if you're trying to learn how to juggle at home, he's the guy who you should learn from. I always wanted to put a juggling tutorial up on YouTube, and I just never got around to doing it. So you can go watch Niels instead, and he's a better juggler than I am, so you'll probably be a better juggler from watching his. So if you're listening on iTunes, leave a comment, a rating, a review, or whatever. Let us know what's going on, what you want to hear. That's it. So goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.